Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. I'm Dan Thomas. Got the likes of Gab Marcotti, Hercules Gomez, Ian Dark, Craig Burley, and Craig's former teammate at Derby County, Danny Higginbottom, will be with us. I'll be asking whether or not Craig was as grumpy in his playing days as he is now. I think we can all guess what the answer is. We start, though, as we always do, by taking a look at how the coronavirus is affecting football around the world in a big meeting today between the 55 delegates of UEFA to discuss the future of this season. Some interesting stuff, pretty much expected, I suppose, overall, in that they said that all national team matches to be played in June are postponed until further notice. All other UEFA competition matches, including Champions League, Europa League, Women's Champions League, are postponed until further notice. And deadlines related to all 2020-21 UEFA club competitions are postponed until further notice. Let's welcome Gab Marcotti into the show. Gab, what's your big takeaway from today's meeting?
I mean, you know, Dan, this is the kind of thing that we look at these and we say these are all common sense solutions from UEFA. I mean, they did what it says on the tin. They listened to the 52 member associations, the ECA, the leagues, all the various stakeholders involved there, and they all said, guys, we need to postpone. Well, some of the stuff you would have had to postpone anyway because you're talking about international dates and whatnot, but they basically said, guys, We need to push the Champions League into the future. We can't even think about this. We don't even have dates about when we can restart our own national leagues. And so they've gone ahead and done that. I think it's just a common sense move at this time while we wait to see how the situation evolves.
Gavin, we've discussed this, of course, in the past. A point that you've brought up on numerous occasions is player contracts. How does this affect that?
Well, this is an issue. I mean, there's a whole story of mine up on the website. The vast majority, pretty much all footballer contracts end on June 30th, and some of them end on June 30th of this year, June 30th, 2020. So, if we're going to extend the season past June 30th, something needs to be done about those guys, and something also needs to be done about the number of players who are on loan at other clubs, because those loan agreements are written in such a way that they end on June 30th. We're talking in total, I worked this out, it's about 20% of the players across the big five leagues. Now, there's some clubs have more, some clubs have fewer. One club in Italy, Spal, they actually have 17 players who are either going to be out of contract or have to go back to their parent clubs on June 30th. So obviously they couldn't keep playing unless you do something about it. Now, FIFA have a meeting on Friday. It's a meeting of the so-called FIFA Bureau. Basically, it's FIFA with representatives of the different confederations. Their working group has suggested effectively unilaterally extending these contracts from June 30th onwards. But as we've talked about on the show, while that is a nice, neat solution for many, there's some who would be very unhappy. I'll give you one obvious example. Hakim Ziyech, he signed a contract to join Chelsea on July 1st for a lot more money than he's on now. Would he want to stick around past June 30th? Is it fair to him if you say, no, Hakim, you're going to stick around for another couple months at Ajax and make less money than you would have done with the contract that you duly signed at Chelsea? That's one thing they need to figure out. There are other issues as well. There's clubs who've got players under contract who maybe they would like to cut loose. They don't want to pay anymore. Why should they be forced to continue paying these guys? So it's a complicated situation. Right now, this is feeling like the least worst solution. We'll have a clearer picture later in the week.
Gab Marcotti, thank you very much. As Gab mentioned, he's written one of his incredible Q&A articles, just talking to himself, basically. But he explains everything really well and quite simply as well. Check that out over on the website. Just a reminder, plenty of content over on our YouTube channel. Be sure to check it out and subscribe. We welcome then, for the very first time, to the show, Danny Higginbottom is here, of course, former Manchester United, Stoke City, Southampton defender, and also former Derby County, Danny, where, of course, you played alongside Craig Burley. I have to ask, was he as much as an idiot then as he is now?
I'm trying to be nice. No, he was... he was a senior player at the time, and unfortunately, I got a nickname very, very early at Derby, and it was Craig that came up with it. So we had our first trip to the La Manga, pre-season training, and I brought my golf clubs, even though I couldn't play golf. And I was rooming with Craig and a few of the other lads, and we had to walk down these stairs. And as I walked down the stairs, Craig shouted me, and I've turned around to him with my clubs on my back, and I just smashed into this huge statue, and the statue's just gone into smithereens. And Craig just looked at me and went, "Your name's Brains." And it stuck with me for far too long. So I'm trying to get away from it now. So I've got Craig to thank for that, as long as teaching me a few certain things as a young professional.
Yeah, I'm sure none of them were positive. Craig, what were your memories of Danny when he joined?
Oh, no.
Well, I can tell Danny knows he wasn't the only one that could have been called Brains at Derby County. We'll get to Rory Delap and maybe the Seth Johnsons of this world later on, but you know, unfortunately, you know, I was Danny's captain at Derby when he first joined under Jim Smith. But unfortunately, it was a really difficult time for the club because we were struggling and had been struggling for a good 2 or 3 years, just surviving in the Premier League, staving off relegation. So it was really difficult. It wasn't an easy club to come into back then because the playing squad wasn't the strongest, and then there was going to be a change of manager in that season. So, yeah, difficult for Danny and others coming in at that time because a lack of stability at the club. But we tried, as he'll probably tell you at some point, we tried to have some fun, but ultimately Jim Smith, the late Jim Smith, lost his job that year, and Derby County were relegated because it was really I tried my best, Daniel. I tried my best, but I just couldn't quite keep the lads on an even keel.
A quick story. So as I was given the nickname of Brains by Craig, later on that evening, we went out for a few drinks, and he had me in a headlock for 4 hours walking around the local bar. And that was his way of telling me he liked me, I guess. Suppose, maybe. Weird ways of doing things, but that was his way. He won't let me out of a headlock.
That was an initiation ceremony, as you know, and we did play this little sort of peanut drinking game. I mean, this is back in the day. These kind of things don't happen now, right? They just do not happen in pre-season training or even end-of-season tours. But somehow we all end up in a bar in some sort of drinking game in Spain. And you know, with these drinking games, when you start losing and you have to drink more, then you start losing even more because you're not thinking straight. And unfortunately, I was the one that was losing. So the drinks were going down, the shots were going down, and somehow I managed to start skittling people out the way in the bar. But unfortunately, I was skittling them with Danny's head, which was in a headlock. So a little bit traumatic for the young man to come in. But hey, that was what we did back in the day, apparently.
Yeah.
Ah, what a shame that bullying culture isn't continuing. Right, let's get on to some football talk, shall we, boys? Danny, we've talked a lot, haven't we, about the Hall of Fame here on the show and the two inductees that the boys would have. I ask the same question to you. Who would you have out of the whole Premier League era?
Oof. For me, there are so many that could go in there, but, you know, the first two really that came to me, I'd had a good think about it, were Alan Shearer and Ryan Giggs. I think both incredible players, legends of the game. And, you know, I'm sure that they'll be at the top of many people's list because they were unique world-class players among such an unbelievable Premier League.
What about, of all the current players who have ever played in the Premier League or are there now, who would you have? Who would be the first person that you would induct who are still playing?
Yeah, I would go with Wayne Rooney. I know a lot of people have mentioned Ronaldo and players like him, Aguero, but I just think Rooney, for what he did from such a young age. We know that Ronaldo joined Manchester United at an early age, and he was there in the Premier League for a long time as well. But I just think Rooney, with his longevity, his records that he broke at Manchester United, how he was able to change his position as well as he started to get a little bit older, and just the sense of anticipation and excitement that he brought to Manchester United as well. He has to be number one for me in terms of being inducted as a player that's still relevant now in terms of playing.
Did Danny say Solskjaer? Was he in there? Because I've noticed recently he's been having a little bit of a love in with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And I don't, did they manage to shoehorn Solskjaer into that Hall of Fame? Did you, Dan?
No, I didn't, but he gave me one of my greatest memories. You know, the 99 treble season, scoring that unbelievable goal in the Champions League final. And he's resurrected Manchester United again. You know, what more can you ask for? And he's a wonderful individual as well. So all is good.
I knew it. We'd touch a nerve there. I knew we'd touch a little nerve. He's resurrecting Manchester United again. Yeah, listen, we don't know what's going to happen this year. What if, say, the season starts again and Sheffield United, Tottenham, Wolves, these teams, it's ifs and buts and maybes, but what if these teams, Chelsea, who are above them, what if they finish above Manchester United, right? What's the scenario for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer going forward? Because that's not resurrecting them if that happens. And by the way, Danny, as you know, if the season does restart, there is every possibility that could happen.
Yeah, there is. I think one of the big things is, and I've actually had to say this to my dad before, because like my dad's one of the biggest Manchester United supporters you'll ever meet. And he wants this instant change. And this is going to be a long process. You know, you've had Van Gaal, you've had Mourinho, you've had Moyes. And for whatever reason, it didn't work out for them. And then Solskjaer then takes a squad which is filled with players from all different managers. And I think what people forget is what he did in the summer that's just gone. He got rid of players that he no longer wanted to be at the club, that possibly didn't want to be there themselves. And that was a huge thing. And United are miles away from your Liverpools and your Manchester Cities. The signings that he's made, let's be honest, he's only really had two real transfer windows. I think his signings have been a success. Fernandes, that was bought in January, has been absolutely magnificent as well. And I think if he's given the summer transfer window the money and the budget to go and bring some more players in, then he can then creep up a little bit closer to the likes of Liverpool and Manchester City. Because let's not forget, Jurgen Klopp's done a phenomenal job at Liverpool. Guardiola's done an unbelievable job at Manchester City as well. But they were given time. And we can't keep having quick fixes at Manchester United, because that's what we've been doing. Been signing players
The difference is, Dan, sorry to interrupt, because I know we're on this little bit of a delay the way we're working at the moment, but the difference is there's the coaches that you mentioned there are all proven with a pedigree. You know, Klopp, Guardiola. So you can trust them with a process and with a long-term plan, as City, as Liverpool have done. But and I know before everything was shuttered down for the lockdown that United had got better and they had signed Bruno Fernandes, the results were getting better. I understand that, but the season hasn't finished. But what's in the pedigree of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in terms of management that people should trust him for the next 4 or 5 years at Manchester United? What, off the back of some good results recently with a new signing? I mean, that's a big ask.
No, of course it is, but I think what you have to look at, to look at Solskjaer and say, as you quite rightly say, as a coach, as a manager, he's not really done that much. Look at Manchester United's two previous managers. They'd won everything. Didn't count for anything. Didn't give them any success.
Yeah.
So what do you want to do? You know, so you have to look at it. No. Both Van Gaal came in as a world-class manager. Mourinho, we know all about him, came in as a world-class manager, didn't work for him. So therefore, bringing in Solskjaer, when it hasn't worked for two world-class managers, as we put it, that have won major championships, major competitions around Europe, then, you know, maybe you have to go the other way. People are talking about Pochettino. I think he did an unbelievable job at Tottenham. But what has he won as a manager himself? So I just think that whoever is to take charge at United, whoever was to take charge, sorry, should I say, after Mourinho, had a huge amount of work to do. And I'm not talking about on the pitch, I'm talking off the pitch. Players that didn't suit certain styles, players that were bought in for different managers. So what you have to do, you have to take care of the work off the pitch before you even dream of getting any success on the pitch.
You know, did get them to a Champions League final, Tottenham that is. My point would be, if the season restarts, and it's a big if, and Man United don't get into the position they want, and these clubs do finish ahead of them, what's the scenario for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer going forward? If they finish 6th, 7th, 8th in the league, does he still get the job and push United forward next season?
I think he has to be. I think he has to be kept in the summer. Or else, otherwise, what you're going to do if you say, right, okay, we're going to go again. That means a manager's going to come in. He's going to want another £200-250 million. He's going to want another group of players that suit his style. Therefore, some of the players that have been brought in for £60-80 million may not suit the style of the new manager. So what are you going to keep doing? You're going to keep ripping it up every 2 years, because that's what United have done. And due to ripping it up, you lose your identity. And Manchester United, since Sir Alex Ferguson left the club, have completely lost their identity. Klopp went to Liverpool. Liverpool were lacking an identity. He's given them identity over a period of time. Likewise with Manchester City to a certain extent, although Guardiola was blessed with having players that could, a lot of players that could actually fit the way that he wanted to play. So when you look at it, you know, and I'm a Manchester United supporter, when you look at it, you think, right, okay, if they don't get, you know, what's considered the required standards of getting into the top four, then is that going to be acceptable? Well, if it's not acceptable, then be prepared to bring in another manager. Be prepared to bring in a load of new players again. Be prepared to get rid of a load of players again. And then the recycle just begins. At some point, that has to stop. And I hope, in my opinion, that that has stopped, because the one thing that we don't have in football now is time. And I think if he's given time, give him the next transfer window, give him the January transfer window, and see where we are at the end of next season. Because at the moment, to get rid of him, when I think he's going in a trajectory of upwards, then would just be, it would be a false hope, because then you say, right, we'll go and get a world-class manager like a Van Gaal, like a Mourinho, but then you'd be ripping up the script again after 2 years.
Craig and Danny will be with me on Extra Time. I just thought we'd bring a couple of questions that have been tweeted in, and the first one's quite apt. It's a series that we're doing over on the website, the best individual performance that you've ever seen on a pitch. Danny, I want to start with you.
Mine would have to be Roy Keane in Champions League 99, the semi-final, the second leg against Juventus. You know, they were completely out of it. They were 2-0 down, I think, after 11 minutes. Roy Keane then gets a yellow card, knowing full well that he's going to miss the final. And he grabbed that team. He grabbed the occasion by the scruff of the neck and dragged it over the finishing line, scoring himself and just having a masterclass in midfield against what was an unbelievable Juventus midfield in Deschamps, Edgar Davids, Zidane. And he was the main man that got them through to that Champions League final. And it's something that will always stand out for me. I was in Belgium at the time on loan at Royal Antwerp. And we were sat in a bar watching the game, and I was ready to walk out after the opening few minutes of the semi-final. And then out of nowhere, you know, he just grabbed hold of the game, and he said to Zidane, he said to Davids, and he said to Deschamps, I'll show you what I'm capable of. I'll show you what one man can do against three. And he was absolutely phenomenal that game.
That takes us on nicely, actually, to the next tweet. Was Roy Keane really as intimidating as he seems all the time, Danny?
Yeah, he was. You know, I had him as a teammate on a few occasions, and I played against him, and then I was fortunate enough to have him as a manager. And as a manager, you play under certain managers that get angry and shout at you. He didn't. He just had to give you the look. And what he said in words, without raising his voice, could just go right through you. And his desire was just immeasurable. It was unbelievable. And I think if you took that out of him, then he wouldn't have been the player that he was. But yeah, he was. He was a fearsome character. I remember, I don't know whether Craig played in the game, when we were at Derby, we played Manchester United at home, and we drew 2-2 with them. And when they took the lead and went 2-1 up, they started showboating, and we came back and we drew 2-2. The one thing that was missing for Manchester United that game was Roy Keane. He was either injured or suspended, because I guarantee you now, if he wasn't missing from that game, it wouldn't have ended up 2-2. Manchester United would have gone on and won the game quite comfortably.
Craig?
Well, I've got absolutely no idea. I can't remember what I was doing last week. Never mind, I was playing against Roy Keane 20-odd years ago. I've no idea, mate, but I did play. I know Roy. I don't profess to be Roy's best buddy or anything like that, but, you know, I know Roy. I've played against him. We're similar age many, many times. And that game that Danny was talking about, and the first question was the game away. I think it was the game away in Turin, which makes it even more incredible, was the fact, and I think Danny might have touched on it, was he knew during that game he was suspended and going to miss the final, which must have been an absolute body blow, and still managed to drag his team around and through. It was an incredible mentality, really.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. As I said, more from Danny and Craig available on Extra Time. Be sure to check that out on our YouTube channel.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Just a reminder, ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow. Now, it's interesting, we've been asking our journalists some of the big moments, best individual performances. Jeff Carlisle, talking about his best ever moment in a soccer match, referred to Landon Donovan's famous late goal. And it's appropriate that we've got Hercules Gomez with us, who started that game, plus the man who was synonymous with that goal, because, Ian, it was you that commentated it.
Yeah, I mean, it was an incredible moment. I think it was like a breakthrough moment, really, for US fans who probably, at the time, some of them were a bit switched off by the game, and there was this fairly dull game where the US were going out of the World Cup, and it looked awful, and then in one split second, it all changed. From going out, they were top of the group, Donovan putting the ball in the net. I remember when I was commentating, there was a moment just before the goal went in, where I think it was Dempsey, his shot was blocked, and there was a kind of sinking feeling, oh no, they've been frustrated again. That was the last chance, and then suddenly Donovan was there, swept it in, and the rest, as you well know, was just mayhem. It remains, what is it, 10 years on, an amazingly dramatic moment.
And Ian, of course, it came, almost everyone knows you because of the Go Go USA call. Is that something that you premeditated? You thought, oh, I'll tell you what, if they get a late goal, I'm going to say this.
Oh, you just can't script moments like that. No, I mean, everything I said then, and to be honest with you, I couldn't remember exactly what I'd said then. That just came out. It sounds, when you listen back to it now, I always think commentaries are of the moment that they happened in. And that's what came out. I just thought, what a fantastic moment for United States soccer for that to happen. So dramatic. And yeah, those words just came out of my mouth. And well, even if I don't look back on them too fondly, some people seem to like them.
Why aren't you fond of them?
Well, I don't know, because it's weird. It's one of these professional things that kicks in and you think, well, does that sound now when you listen to it back? Does that sound sort of hopelessly biased or kind of crazy? Was it the right, wrong thing to do? But, you know, the viewers liked it. And I remember getting inundated with calls from radio guys and newspaper columnists asking the question you just asked, Dan. Did I script that line? Not a hope in hell.
Meanwhile, it would be surprised for no one to learn that Herc was on the bench, of course, during this big moment.
Yeah. By that time, I'm on the bench. I started this game. Tim Howard, this trademark, you know, U.S. men's national counterattack, finds Landon in stride. I believe it was Josie Altidore on the right-hand side who may have thought of going in, held his run. He was overlapping. Ball's played to Josie Altidore, who slots a great ball across, a little in front of Clint Dempsey. And then Ian's right. It's that moment where Clint Dempsey shoots, takes that touch, and the keeper comes out strong off his line, and he blocks it. And you're like, oh, no, that was it. And the ball falls to Landon Donovan. It couldn't have fallen to a more perfect player for what is the U.S. men's national team. For what was that tournament, he slots it home, and then it's mayhem. I don't remember. Everybody who was on the bench cleared. We did like a 50-yard run to Landon. It was a dogpile for about 20, 30 seconds. What I do recall, Dan, is after the game, the next day, we get videos sent from us, motivational videos from the United States, and it's everybody reacting to the goal, to Ian Dark's call of Landon's goal. It was one of the most, I still get these goosebumps just thinking about that moment, the response from people back home in the States who we didn't really know if they were paying attention. The response was overwhelming.
Very, very special moment. Gents, thank you very much for recapping it with me. Just a reminder, Herc is going for a series of moment. Really good in-depth interviews available on YouTube. The latest one, Catching Up with Tyler Adams. For all the latest news regarding the transfer window, be sure to check out Transfer Talk over on the website. A lot of speculation about the future of De Ligt, linking him to Manchester United, Gab.
Yeah, and look, I mean, this is one of those things where there isn't much going on. Sometimes these transfer stories take on a life of their own. The indication that we've had is that, you know, De Ligt was well settled at Juventus. Obviously, he was on the bench early in the season, even after Chiellini got hurt. Demiral was starting, then Demirali got hurt. But over the past sort of 6 weeks before the break, De Ligt had been starting. He'd been playing really, really well. And there was was a sense that he was still a very young player. So I would be slightly skeptical about this, also because he would cost an absolute mint, given that Juventus paid a ton of money for him. Also, if United were so fixated on him, surely they could have signed him last summer, when, of course, they didn't. It just seems like an odd one at this time. There's another obvious factor in this mix, which I think might make United a little bit skeptical, which is, of course, De Ligt's, the guy who looked after him is Mino Raiola, who isn't exactly super popular at United. Of course, he's also the agent to Paul Pogba and Romero and others. All that said, the only way I see this happening is if Juventus find themselves in a situation where they need to raise cash quickly. Obviously, they made a hefty loss at the 6 month mark, but they were going to claw it back later, or they hope to claw it back later. Now, we don't know how the pandemic is obviously going to affect them. I think every club is obviously hit hard, but De Ligt is one of Juve's most saleable assets, alongside with Paulo Dybala. So that would be the only possible scenario, but I find that very, very far-fetched at this time. I'm sure United are monitoring them like they monitor every talented young player out there, but I think it would be bizarre for me to think that United would make him a priority now in April, and that Juve would consider a move like this now in April.
What's more far-fetched, De Ligt or Erling Haaland, Gab?
Well, I mean, bear in mind, I think we are taping this on April Fool's Day, if I'm not mistaken. So the thing with the Erling Haaland argument is that he does have a release clause, but now this is something that Borussia Dortmund haven't officially said he has a release clause, but most people have tracked the story and, their reporting suggests that he does have a release clause. But that doesn't come into effect, my understanding is, until the summer of 2021. So this idea that you can get Erling Haaland for the release clause, which most people peg at around 70, 80 million euros, something like that, simply isn't true. Now, the question would be, why would Haaland, having said no to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and United in January, suddenly change his mind in the summer and say, hey, I want to be on the move again? It seems like an odd situation. It also seems odd for the same reasons that we mentioned before. Marcus Rashford coming back from injury, Mason Greenwood developing, Igalo has contributed, in the games that he's played in. Is this really the absolute priority for Manchester United right now? And of course, at the risk of repeating myself, who looks after Erling Braut Haaland? Why? It's Mino Raiola again. You'd almost wonder if United aren't gluttons for punishment in linking their or in being linked to two guys represented by Mino. It's almost like Mino is like a bad relationship that you just can't shake. So again, for these reasons, it would seem improbable to me at this time.
Shifting gears slightly, over on the website, they've asked the writers to come up with their best ever in-game experience, that they were there, that they saw it. Jules talking about Zidane against Brazil. I think I could have taken maybe 100 guesses, Gab, and I wouldn't have come up with yours. US against Belgium and Tim Howard's performance in the World Cup.
Well, I did want to repeat myself, and this was a game that I was at, and Tim Howard made an absurd amount of saves in that game. Belgium could have easily won 4-5-0. What really struck me about that was how poorly the U.S. played as a unit, how poorly coached they were on that day, how they failed to kind of make any adjustments, and Belgium were pretty much shooting at will. And, you know, whether it was Belgium's poor aim or whether it was Tim Howard standing tall, they didn't beat him until very late on.
Wait, of all the games that you've been to, that's the one. That stands out more than any other, even though the U.S. lost.
Well, yeah, because it's an individual performance, right? It's not a team performance. I can only go by the games that I went to. And when somebody like Tim Howard, who, you know, with all due respect, is a very good goalkeeper, was a very good goalkeeper when he was playing. But, you know, I think he'd be the first to say he's not in the top 10 players of all time. For me, when a guy like Howard pulls off a performance like that, it stands out more than, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo's hat trick against Spain. I was there for that phenomenal performance from Cristiano. But you know what? Cristiano's done it before. He'll probably do it again. And he's Cristiano Ronaldo. The same way I saw some great performances from Lionel Messi over the years. But, you know, to have Tim Howard go and just be a shutdown keeper like that, it really, really resonated for me on that night.
Meanwhile, if you've listened to the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, what am I saying? I'm sure you all have. You'd have heard Gab bring up the point that they are still playing in Nicaragua in quite extraordinary circumstances, Gab.
Yeah, pretty remarkable in the sense that, you know, this isn't like Belarus where they were also playing and you know, they're saying, well, you know, we're tough men and it's cold and drink some vodka and we'll be fine. And by the way, in Belarus, a lot of fan groups, a lot of ultras groups are now boycotting games, and they seem to have more sense than some of the authorities there. The odd thing in Nicaragua is that they continued playing, but there was a remarkable interview with one of the players in a Spanish newspaper, and you might have seen this picture floating around on social. They went and they all played with surgical masks and gloves on. Now, I mean, I suppose that makes it safer. I think it was also partly, a way of perhaps communicating how important hygiene and distancing is. But it does feel pretty extraordinary. I'm not familiar with the COVID-19 count in Nicaragua, but it was certainly very, very striking to see players running around the pitch wearing surgical masks.
I've seen the picture. It's quite incredible. By the way, the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast will drop tomorrow. Obviously, they're going through the alphabet regarding the best 11 of current players. They've reached the letter D. Be sure to check that out. You can always tweet Gab at Marcotti for your suggestions as well for your 11.
Geico has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Napa know-how.
Father's Day knickknacks, that funny mug, ironic tie, or worse, IOU coupon books. It's time to get yourself something you want, Dad, like a Craftsman half-inch corded impact wrench for $99.99. It's the perfect gift to give to yourself. And while you're here, don't forget to shop all our great deals on Craftsman tools. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Offer ends 6/30/20.
Little check on social media to end the show. Alisson keeping his eye in. You'd expect nothing less, though, surely, from the Brazilian international. Much smaller window, maybe, next time. Meanwhile, Van Dijk did a Q&A yesterday. He was asked about the most difficult player he had to defend against. Surprise, surprise, he said, Lionel Messi. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has joined us. Be sure to stay tuned for Extra Time. Danny and Craig are back. You've got to watch this. Stay with us. Hello and welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweets. Craig Burley is here, as his is former teammate Danny Higginbottom. Danny, lots of questions for you. A lot about your relationship with Craig when you played with each other. We talked about this in the show. For Danny, how was Craig Burley as a teammate at Derby? I'll just say, as a work colleague, you couldn't ask for worse. Complains about everything all the time. Was he like that as a footballer?
You must have played football with him. He must have done, because that's exactly how he was. But he was the captain. And the thing was, I played, like, obviously it was central midfield, and I was either centre-back or left-back. So more often than not, when I made a mistake, he just looked over his shoulder. And sometimes it wouldn't be even words. It was actually worse. There'd just be a shake of a head as if to look as if to say, what are you doing? But no, Craig was good. You know, he was someone that I admired as well, because I was 21 years of age. You know, and I'm coming to Derby, and he was one of the players that stood out when the club was sold to me by Jim Smith. And then when I went in there, you'd rather have him. I'm not just giving compliments because he's doing the show and what have you, but you'd rather have him as a teammate than not, because when you go into the dressing room, what I liked was that he would say whatever he felt, but it wasn't personal. It was said at the time, and it was all to try and make you a better player. And he would listen to opinions of the younger players as well, even though at times he'd say that, you know, the one thing that's wrong with football is these younger players. But he used to listen to our opinions as well, probably take no notice, go off on a tangent with himself at times. But no, he was a great teammate. And like I say, unfortunately, it was probably, like I said, I think it was for two and a half years, in a very turbulent time at Derby.
Danny, the best Premier League, best Premier game that you've done this season?
I'd probably go to Sheffield United versus Manchester United. You know, Sheffield United, for me, you know, they've been unbelievable this season. I think Chris Wilder should be Premier League Manager of the Year. And they played really well in that game. They went 2-0 up. And then Ole Gunnar Solskjaer made a couple of substitutions.
Wait, Dan, why should Chris Wilder be Premier League Manager of the Year when Jurgen Klopp's only lost one game? He's breaking all the records. That makes no sense whatsoever.
Why does it make no sense? Because they would have won the Premier League last season if Manchester City weren't so great. What I do, I always look at comparisons to the previous season. If you look at comparisons to the previous season, then you see just how well a manager's done. Yes, Jurgen Klopp, he's gone one step beyond us in terms of winning the Premier League and winning it at a canter, which you're quite rightly saying. But this is a Sheffield United team that got promoted from the Championship. So many people said they were going to go straight down. He's not changed their style of play. Still have a possibility of breaking into the top five, top four. On a very small budget, what he's done it on as well. And look at the performances that he's had against some unbelievable teams. This is a Liverpool team that you look at. You know, they've got some of the most expensive defenders in the world, one of the most expensive goalkeepers in the world. They're incredible. So I compare it to last season and what Sheffield United did last season. Yes, they got promoted automatically from the Championship, but to finish where they're looking like they could finish, you know, I don't care whether Jurgen Klopp wins the Premier League by, you know, however many points it is.
Danny,
Danny,
ignore him. Ignore him. He's an elitist. Outside Liverpool, Man U, Chelsea, and a couple of others, he doesn't care.
So he's part of the snobbery. He's part of the snobbery brigade.
He's very much part of the snobbery brigade. It's all about the big wigs for Daniel. It's all about the big wigs. Doesn't recognise the Chris Wilders of this world. They don't exist. Is that right, Dan Thomas?
Hey, what about this? What if Jurgen Klopp took over at Sheffield United and Wilder's over at Liverpool?
But I tell you what.
Who's your money on to replicate that success?
I tell you what, it was no surprise. Let me just go back a little bit. But there's no surprise Danny shoehorned Man United into the best game of the season anyway. But that's a point for another day. Yeah. I'll come back to that. There's no doubt Jurgen Klopp is, you know, statistically a better manager at the top level than Chris Wilder. That's not to take away from what Chris Wilder has done with the clubs he's been at, like Northampton. I think maybe he was certainly at Oxford as a player, and at Sheffield United, the way they've played this year has been. What's the biggest surprise? That Liverpool are top of the league, or Sheffield United, depending what happens with the rest of the season, might get in the Champions League? What's the bigger surprise, Dan Thomas?
That Liverpool are top of the league by 25 points over Manchester City, who came into this
looking to win it
three times in a row.
They lost Vincent Company, they lost Laporte, Manchester City are worse than last season. That's got nothing to do with what Liverpool have done.
The fact that Sheffield United are so high up just shows how bad the rest of Premier League have been.
No, Sheffield United have been incredible. And it's okay saying you can't swap Chris Wilder and Jurgen Klopp and say, how would they do? I'll tell you now, Jurgen Klopp would not have got Sheffield United where they are now. Absolutely no chance whatsoever. I remember watching and covering Sheffield United.
Now we've got it, Danny. He's not only shoehorning Man United into the best game, he hates Jurgen Klopp. Dan!
No, I...
We've pushed you on, he's...
I love Jurgen Klopp and I respect Liverpool. As a United supporter, I don't love Liverpool.
Would fail at Sheffield United. They would have got relegated under Jurgen Klopp.
Yes, that because they would have changed the system. So there you go. And before this season started, their record transfer was £4 million as well. How many £4 million players play for Liverpool now?
We've caught a big one, Dan. We've caught a big one.
Easy.
Let's move on. Ronaldinho, bicycle kick against Villarreal or the Cristiano Ronaldo bicycle kick against Juventus? Which one are you having, Danny?
I'm going to go for Ronaldinho against Villarreal. Yes, I know Ronaldo played for Manchester United, Craig, so that can be taken out of the equation. But I just feel that the circumstances with it, he had to take a first touch on his chest. And I think then he had to completely change his direction. He had to completely change his bearings and everything, and doing that with his back to goal was absolutely incredible. Yes, Ronaldo's was magnificent as well, as in terms of how high up he got to get it. But he had one thing to go for, whereas Ronaldinho, he had to chest it and then reorganise himself to then get the shot on target. So I'm going for Ronaldinho because of that. And Ronaldinho nearly signed for Manchester United as well.
Craig won't remember the Ronaldinho one, will you, Craig?
Is that what he sent me today, our producer? He sent me this text message about 3 hours ago. It had two links on it. And then he says, and then beneath it, he said, who's the best penalty taker ever? And I'm like, what a random question that is. So I sent him back, Gabriel Jesus, as we know. Ronaldo overhead kick. You know I talked about that the other night.
Right, good. Let's move on to that second question that you were sent to think about, mull over, maybe do some research. Best penalty taker ever. Who are you going for, Danny?
Yeah. Well, me.
What I've got to say as well, to Craig's defence, he did spend an hour and a half talking to me earlier today. So I think that probably took most of his, you know, what he had available to listen to me. But I'm going to go for Matt
life.
Yeah.
That took life. Dan, that took life out of me. That's the only thing available.
That's what I'm saying. I'm sticking up for you.
It's like every day.
I'm going to go for Matt Letizia. As in terms of best penalty, you know, 47 out of 48. I took, I think, 13 and scored 13. So I didn't miss one, but I didn't take as many as him. So, you know, I'm going for Matt Letizia.
Did you ever take three in a game? Did you ever take three in a game? That's pressure. Have I mentioned that, Dan?
Was that City?
Yeah.
And you missed the last one.
You were there then, were you?
Year before I came, that was. I remember it, though. Keeper should have saved two of them.
I did miss the last one, Dan, but it was the stepping up and taking the responsibility was the highlight.
Craig, I had one. Yep. So obviously you must have been injured at the time. I think we played Bolton away and Rab was the penalty taker. If you remember, he missed one against Liverpool and he missed one against Newcastle. See, I know Craig's really enjoying this. And he was crying in the dressing room after the Liverpool miss. And we played Bolton away, and we got a penalty, and Rav's got the ball in his hand. And I've just gone up to him, like I say, 22-year-old kid, and I said, Rav, don't worry about it, you'll score this, and, you know, just as a throwaway line, I'll take it if you want. He gave me the ball. And I was like, oh, no, what am I going to do now? So fortunately, I did score. My brother jumped onto the pitch and got arrested and chucked out the ground. So it was a good day all round.
Blimmin' heck. Ravenelli, big-time bottler, says former teammate Danny Higginbottom. That's an interesting claim.
Hey, listen. Yeah. Yeah, I was talking to Dan earlier, as you mentioned, Danny. And listen, you know how that story I tell Dan on the show about Rory Delap not telling Jim Smith he had the long throw? And I thought to myself,
yep,
am I making this up? Am I making this up, or is that really the case? Well, I was talking to Danny earlier, and we were reminiscing about that, because we're both, you know, particularly Danny, he's been a good friend with Rory for years, and I said to Danny, was I, you know, dreaming about that? Did Rory really not have the long throw at Derby? He said, it's worse than that. Both of them went to Southampton after Derby, and he never told anybody at Southampton either. I mean, it's just incredible.
It was great. But the best thing was that when Tony Pulis realised he had a long throw, so we were doing like shape, because, you know, Tony loved to work on shape from Tuesday till Friday, then we had the game on the Saturday. And we were basically defending crosses coming into the box, and Rory was just walking around the pitch, because I think he maybe had been injured, but he was going to be okay for the game. So Tony just said to him, he said, Rory, he said, just get the ball and just lob us a few balls in. So everyone's expecting him to get it in one arm and just overhead it into the box. He picks it up and gets it in a normal throwing position and just launches it into the box. If you could have seen Tony Pulis's face, he hit gold, he struck gold, and everybody was like, wow. And then from then on, you know, I didn't see any team deal with it well at all. It wasn't so much the distance he got on it, but it was the trajectory and the power, and there was so many own goals scored from it, and it was just incredible. I remember we played against Hull, and the ball went back to Hull's goalkeeper, and instead of putting it out for a throw, he put it out for a corner. It was just, everyone was scared of it, but yeah, that was Rory. He probably didn't know he had it himself.
Danny, in which FA Cup final did you feel confident to win more, 2003 or 2011?
Possibly the 2011 one, I would say, because 2003 was when Arsenal were right at their pomp, mm-hmm. and just beating us 6-2 in the league. And then 2011, you know, we'd had a really good season, have done well against some of the bigger clubs, and coming up against Manchester City, you know, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think that might have been their first bit of silverware. So I think, you know, we fancied our chances going into that game. We ended up losing 1-0. But that was a great season for everybody. I ended up missing the FA Cup final because I think I did my cruciate about 3 or 4 weeks before the final took place. But I would say we're probably more confident going into that game against Manchester City than we were against Arsenal.
How much did you enjoy playing at Stoke?
Loved it. Loved it. My favourite time in my career. Tony Pulis was a manager that was very good at bringing in characters, very similar really to Derby to a certain extent. Craig will tell you there's some really good lads there and good characters, but we had a dressing room at Stoke which was, yes, he wanted good players, but he wanted characters that could go on the pitch, and if one player was hurt, everybody was hurt. And I think that was, you know, that was behind a lot of our success. And Stoke's a working class area, and the players that were brought in, working class players as well, and they just got it. And for a certain period of time, the supporters and the players were as one, and it was, goes without saying, it was, you know, the favourite time of favourite part of my career without question, with some really enjoyable times and some great results.
Good question this, Danny. How were you eligible to declare for the Gibraltar national team?
I bet Craig wants to answer this, doesn't he? I can just see he's just desperate just to throw something. Right, so my uncle was manager at the time, and I'd been asked a few years previously, you know, whether I'd get involved with them, but they weren't recognised by FIFA or UEFA at the time, so it wouldn't have made much sense to them. Now, my mum is full Spanish, but my grandma is Gibraltarian. So it is through blood. It isn't because, you know, I went to Gibraltar for a weekend and did whatever there. Nothing like that. So it was through blood, and it was a great experience for me. They wanted me to carry on through the Euros, but I couldn't justify because I was retiring from football, because I'd had enough of the day to day side of things in the game. So, you know, it was short and sweet. I played a few games for them, enjoyed it, and it was a wonderful experience.
Thank you very much, St. Craig. Thank you, Danny, as well. Much appreciated. We will be back tomorrow.